I firmly believe that we deserve, period.
I just feel like it's important to keep saying that out loud, that this is us learning in public.
The foundation of how to not have trash politics is really just relationships, right?
So if you're not aware of how powerful you are, then how can you be using your power to bring others up?
We're giving you collective liberation. We're giving you personal healing. We're giving you millennial auntie with a mic.
You're listening to Scene, the podcast.
Something we discuss often on the podcast, as well as just in our friendship away from microphones, is the idea of collectivism. I mean, it's kind of what we're all about, like collective healing and liberation and moving away from individualism. And yet, because we live in such an individualistic society, it's so much easier to talk about that than to actually live it. And I know for me, there's been a lot of conversations that we've had about community and how to be in community together. And they're beautiful conversations. And I really genuinely feel and resonate with what we're talking about. And at the same time, I feel like I often don't get as much of a chance as I would like to practice a lot of those ideas, because I don't feel like I am in community as much as I would like to be. And in this conversation, I specifically am meaning groups. So I have one-on-one relationships that are so incredibly valuable and intimate and incredible. And we practice immediacy and accountability and things with each other. But there is a group dynamic that I'm missing. Mm. Do you relate to that at all? Or do you feel like you have tight-knit groups to the extent that your heart desires? Or where are you at with that?
So I feel like it's really easy for me to conflate community with friends. Like just, you know, so like thinking about the people in my life, like you and others who are my people. And so I usually define you all as my community. And this conversation is, maybe it's going to be challenging for me, which I think is interesting, only because maybe my concept of community is still really like localized. And by that, I mean like really small. And maybe I'm missing people. Like maybe my idea is a little bit too zoomed in, and I could be zooming out to think about the ways that, like, for example, my friend group interacts and engages with other groups of people or other clusters of, you know what I mean, other groups of friends who share similar values or ideals, or maybe we do or work on similar types of liberation work. But yeah, I never think beyond my own circle. And I think that's kind of intentional, mostly because I think a few years ago I read something or came across something that basically was describing or asserting that this notion of community, we say the word a lot, but we don't actually know who we're talking about. Like, we can say community and mean folks that follow us on Instagram. We can say community and think about people who live in our neighborhood. We can say community and think about the folks that we might say hi to if we were at some kind of event or demonstration or action or something like that, like folks that you would kind of tend to associate yourself with. I could say community and think about acquaintances. So it's kind of a weird term. And when I came across that sort of suggestion that community is really this evasive, like, kind of difficult to pin down thing, it kind of made me go, okay, well, I don't know about all that stuff, but I definitely know who my community is, and it's my friends. So you know what I mean? So anyways, I don't know if I have the best working definition of community to even begin with.
That makes sense. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So it'll be interesting to see how this conversation progresses. I have a suspicion that it's going to be one of those things where we have a lot of similarities in certain ways and then totally
divergent in others,
which is so often how it is. So I am very curious. So the question I wanted us to talk about today was asking how we build the communities of our dreams. But before we can ask that, let's talk about what would a community of our dreams look like. So I'll go first, and then we can see how you resonate with it or don't. So again, I have a lot of one-on-one relationships that are so loving and intimate and deep, and I'm so grateful for those things. And when I said I want to focus more on groups, I think the community of my dreams that I haven't built yet involves there being, I guess, a group that has relationships with each other, like cross relationships, because we all need a lot of people. So for example, if I'm having a conflict with one person, that there's somebody else who can sit with us and help us work through that and see each other's sides and kind of cross that divide. If somebody is really unwell, maybe there is a spreadsheet so that like we're all taking shifts so that we can all make sure that this person is being cared for. Someone's dropping off food, someone's doing laundry, someone's cleaning up for them, someone sitting with them, things like that. You know, if it's someone's birthday, there's a bunch of us that will show up. If somebody, you know, there's something to celebrate, there's a lot of people who will show up. And I think there's so much that we can do for each other one-on-one, and we all have limits. And I think there's a lot that gets lost, or there's a lot less that we can do when I'm one person and I'm like, how do I support my friend who's going through such a hard time? You know, whereas if I had, depending on, you know, what kind of community we're talking about, if I had 5 people or 10 people or 20 people or 50 people that I could pull into that, there's so much more we could do for that person. So that's the kind of thing that I'm dreaming of and that I don't have built in my life right now. And so I'm curious how that landed with you, if that's something you would want, if that's something you relate to, if that's something you have.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you just described kind of sounds, so maybe I can ask a clarifying question just so I can better understand what you mean, because when you just described folks who would show up if there was conflict and be able to sort of support all the people that are involved and like hear folks out, or if somebody was in real need and was ill or sick, and that there would be like a community of people kind of wrapping themselves around that person. Am I hearing you right or understanding you right? When you're just saying those things, I think I have that. But I think I have that as like the person who's connected to all those individual people. I'm the one who holds the relationship. So I have like, let's say I have 15 people that I know I could call if I needed them urgently about something. Are you saying that the difference between like a friend group or people who I associate and think of, these are my friends, these are my people, some of them might know each other, but you're saying that the community element or the community aspect, that they would have relationships with each other collectively, that it wouldn't just be oriented to like you calling in a favor. Is that sort of how you're differentiating? Okay.
Yes.
Because in that case, I think, I mean, yes, I would love all those things, first of all. So yeah, I don't think that I have that necessarily. I think that what I have is more like people might know of each other, but there's not, I mean, COVID has changed so much in terms of like how people can be in community. And I think that had that not been the case, you know, had the not past 2 years not happened, like, who knows what that would have looked like. I mean, at the beginning of, before COVID in 2019, we had just started seeing and we were really curious and excited about having like those kind of community conversations and actually doing things in person with folks and cultivating a real like tangible IRL community. And that's something that we haven't really been able to do because of course the pandemic. And so I think that like, had we been able to do that, that's something that would have been really interesting to see. And maybe my needs are less about the things you described, although I would love those things, but more so a group of folks who we all in general kind of come from obviously different backgrounds and different experiences and have different things to offer, but we are all supporting a similar interest or set of values. And so it's really easy for me to use the example of the podcast because it's like, well, do you believe in, you know, personal healing and collective liberation? Yes. Then first of all, the podcast is a really good connector in that way. But I think that for me, it would be more about knowing that folks share my values and not necessarily my outlook on life, but like values. And maybe, and I think that it would be less about what they could do for me in that kind of way. Like it, that's what matters to me when it comes to community. And again, I don't know how to define it. Do you have like a working definition of what community means that feels robust and maybe like a bit more? Because I don't think I think it's still kind of an evasive, undefined thing.
I don't, because I mean, it's not just one thing to me either. Mm-hmm. There's layers, and I think that it's kind of the principle to me. I kind of think of the principle of as above, so below, which is a spiritual principle, but I am kind of applying it in this as well, because I think the skill of being in a group and being invested in a group and responsible to a group and showing up for a group, I think works at many different levels. And I think the more we have that as a group in our personal lives, whether it's our, for some people it's family, like biological family, for some people it's more of a chosen family. But the more we do that, the more we can also use those skills to build in a broader community. So I saw on Son of Baldwin's social media page, someone was making a comment about, you know, we have to look locally. That's where a lot of the change will happen. And he linked, you know, and said, well, this is what we're doing in my community. And it was this kind of citizens group in Brooklyn that were working together on a lot of different local political issues, whether it's housing or responding to COVID. I don't remember specifically what all of the ones for that group were, but I think having a tight knit group of people where if you're not really responding to my texts or something, and I'm kind of concerned about how you've been, there's other people I can call and be like, hey, Nick has seemed kind of off. Like, is she okay? Do you think she's okay? Do you know if there's anything going on? And we can really discuss that with each other, I think is one level of that group. And I think then we can take it to another level where it's like, oh, you know, there was this fire in Gastown yesterday and a lot of people lost a lot of things. So, okay, how can we mobilize and make sure everyone's taken care of? You know, it's different, maybe different levels, but similar skills. But I think in all of those cases, having one-to-one deep relationships are such an important part of that, but that's very limiting if it stops there.
What you just said reminds me of something that I read in Adrienne Marie Brown's Emergent Strategy about like murmurations. She describes the ways that we need to like cycle upwards almost. Like we start with something small and then we kind of make ripples. And so, yeah, I never really thought about, and I totally agree with you about like the one-to-one relationships, of course, they're the foundation of community, but that's not you can't mistake one for the other, because community, as you're describing it, which I really love, and it's going to be included in my working definition now, is like, it's oriented towards a something that's collective, and it's not, it doesn't hinge on one person. It's not like if one person doesn't make the thing, then we're like, oh, we missed the key dynamic or the key so-and-so. It's like, no, we have other people who are able to fill that role or step in with whatever connections they have, whatever skills they might have, and who shows up for what is depending on the what, you know, like it's not like everybody might be able to be there all at the same time together, but that there's like some kind of symbiosis where it's like, well, in these circumstances I can, in these circumstances I can't. And I would love to feel, I know we talked about this before and I can't recall what episode it was, but the amount of responsibility that falls on folks when they're not able to show up for something, I'm sure becomes more diminished, or at least that guilt that follows with the responsibility when you can't do something becomes diminished when you know that there are other people who are also going to show up in your place, you know?
Yeah. It's the same way that the nuclear family, because of colonialism, has become in this society, the sort of default unit. It really doesn't serve our families well, because parents are just humans and they're often really struggling under capitalism and everything to do everything they need to do for their kids. And when we had these more extended family structures, so it's not just parents who are responsible for everything day to day, but there's also grandparents and aunts and uncles and neighbors and everybody's, you know, the village model, the kids are so much better served, and so are the parents. So I'm wondering if you feel like you have ever experienced that. Have you ever been a part of communities where there is that collectivism and where there's a larger kind of network of people who are responsible to each other and showing up for each other?
Yeah, I think when I was younger and my family, the church we went to when I was a kid, was a lot of Black African folks, Caribbean folks, and the nature of that meant that we called everybody auntie and uncle. Like, that was really common. It was like disrespectful to call anybody by their first name, which I think is, in lots of cultures, that's the case. And folks would show up for other community members, other churchgoers, even people that were kind of newer to the community or newer to the church would kind of be subsumed into the collective. So if folks had needs, they were able to have them met. And I think what it usually looked like was child rearing and child minding in a collective way, food distribution, taking care of like elders, like that kind of thing. And I think that when we ended up switching churches and going to another one that wasn't as Black and wasn't as, there was a lot more, it wasn't as Black, and but more than that, it was that you didn't have people that maybe shared cultural values of like that sort of collectivist nature. It was still church, but it was, there was something, a characteristic changed in the makeup of who was there. And I think that it can be a lot easier to have some of these models of community or these ways of cultivating community through culture or shared culture than it can be when, I think it's just maybe it could be more difficult when you don't share some of those ways of being or inherited ways of doing things or inherited ways of thinking about like how you relate to an elder as an auntie, right? And I think with a lot of friends of mine who we don't share culture, but we are all folks of culture, I guess. Like, so, you know, our parents immigrated and we're all like either or we're born here or we immigrated. It's like that still remains intact, that practice of, let's say, calling uncles and aunt people uncle and aunt when they're actually, you know, not like related to you. but something else gets lost, right? You don't have the same, like I would call, if I met your dad, I might call him, I might refer to him as like an uncle. Like that's what I would think of. And that's how I think of elders who are racialized. I just like, that's usually my orientation. So I feel like maybe that makes me more responsible for folks. But again, that's on an individual level. That's not like it's reciprocal, right? Like mm-hmm. it doesn't. And so I think there's a reciprocity that's not just one-to-one. It's like, it cycles beyond just one individual's relationship with me. Anyways, mm-hmm. does that make sense at all?
It does. Yeah. And I guess I'm just thinking about how that sounds really lovely and warm to have that extended network that you had through your church. But then I'm also wondering if it was complicated or if the memories of it are complicated because of the oppressiveness of the church itself, you know, because of homophobia or sexism or other things that I imagine or that you've talked about that were really damaging to you in the church.
I think I'm able to distill some of the like positive warm fuzzy stuff and separate that from some of the more challenging pieces. But I think there is still obviously connection because when you have a foundation of relationship that's supposed to be family-like because you're calling people uncles and aunts and things like that, the depth of harm or the depth of when harm happens or when disconnection happens within that space, you have really high expectations that it will be okay, that you'll be able to resolve things, that you'll be able to maintain or stay in. And that's not always the case. And I think that can be really challenging when you have community and suddenly your place within it becomes maybe untenable, or if you're not showing up in ways that people expect you to or need you to, you feel less welcome, right? So maybe if I were to flip that, I would say like how I would want community to look and feel would be, and we talked about this during the TJ episode or the transformative justice episode, that people would feel like we really are each other's business and that like we wouldn't let people off the hook so easily, like, and not in the sense of you need to be accountable, but like, no, come back. Like, don't leave because we don't know how to show up for you, or don't leave because like, just don't leave. Right. Like stay there. Mm. There would be a sense of intention to keep the group together, to keep the community together. And people would feel invested in not just keeping the group as it is, because then it becomes a clique, but like actively inviting folks in and actively considering like, what is the dynamic that we're creating? Like people would be thinking about that, and they wouldn't be like, let's take a review of our organizational culture or something like that. But people would have and be tuned into like, oh, it seems like, you know, we're getting to this place where we're like a really big community. Like maybe we can think a bit more about how we work with other communities, or we're noticing that by and large, only certain people show up for certain things. Like what are other ways that folks can be involved in particular ways that align with their capacity, that there would be some sort of active consideration that wouldn't always be about like, oh, so-and-so has a need. It would also just be about like, what's the quality of these relationship dynamics that we have between us?
Mm-hmm. Totally. And when you talk about, yeah, don't leave and just continuing to show up for each other, when I think about the community that I long for, the first thing I think about isn't actually being supported. The first thing I think about is being responsible to other people. Mm. Like, I long for being part of communities where things are being asked of me.
Really?
And I'm expected to show up. And it's noticed if I don't. And I need to answer for that, and not in a coercive way, because I would still want to have boundaries, and I'm not going to meet every expectation that anyone else has of me. Mm-hmm. But I want someone to ask, you know, like I don't want to be able to just isolate myself and have no one ask questions or no one notice. I want people to demand things of me, which I don't know if that's weird, but that's honestly like the thing I think about the most when I long for community.
Yeah, because when you want others to notice you when you're not there, it means that you matter, right? Like it means that your absence was felt. It means that people are witnessing you and like recognizing what you bring or what you've, you know, add to the space or add to the collective. And when you first said that, I was like, really? Like you want people to be demanding of you? And then when it was like, you know, I want people to notice when I'm not there and be like, hey, where were you? Or like, hey, how are things or whatever? I'm like, you know what? That makes perfect sense to me. Mm. You know, there's so many times in my life where I've been like, oh, I won't go to this thing. No one will notice that I'm not there.
Mm.
And no one said anything afterwards. And this is not me being like, it was a test and everyone failed, you know, like that's not it. But if somebody had said to me, hey, I thought I was going to see you there. Like, where were you? I think that would be like my invitation for next time. And I think that that's a huge part of what I think I crave when it comes to community is more invitations to show up with each other. Mm-hmm. And I want to rephrase what I said earlier, that because I mentioned it's not just about a cause or something that people necessarily need, or I do think that that's the most, like one of the most important reasons why community should exist is to like meet the needs of the people within it. But it's also about the way that you're able to contribute just by being you in a place. Like maybe it's not necessarily, oh, you know, Lala, you didn't show up to this action or you didn't show up to do this, you know, like drive or something like that. But maybe it's like, no, Lala's presence like adds this thing. And we didn't necessarily need you to do something. It's just that like by you being here, we know that you're never going to let any of us, I don't know, be so hard on ourselves. Or like Nick's always going to be able to joke about things and sort of lighten the mood or whatever it might be, you know, like, so the dynamic piece, the dynamics in the room or the dynamics in the space, I think is really important as well.
Yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned contributions, because I think that's a big piece of what I long for when I want to feel obligations, is that I think I want to contribute and I want to be asked to contribute and I want to be expected to contribute.
Hmm.
And how I contribute will look different than how someone else might. I want a community that understands also my disability and my capacity and that can still recognize that I do have a lot to contribute and expect me to do that.
Right.
And yeah, I don't know. It still feels kind of funny to sort of long for obligation, but I think maybe it is what you said, that that's how we know that we matter. It's like having a purpose in a community.
Mm. And I really appreciate you mentioning that it would be a community that of your dreams would be one that recognizes both your disability and that there are many things you are able to do and able to contribute. I wonder if when we only conceptualize community in a way that's just oriented around doing things, who we end up losing or who ends up by virtue of what is required or what is expected or what is demanded in the action, in the thing that happens when you show up, that a lot of people believe, whether or not, you know, it's true or not, that like, oh, what I have to offer won't be helpful here, so I just shouldn't at all. Mm-hmm. And there's something really sad about that, because then I think about the ways that I'm sure a lot of our communities, however we conceptualize them, are deeply ableist and deeply, you know what I mean? Like, and I'm sure you know what I mean, sorry. deeply ableist and deeply just oriented towards a certain type of skill set or a certain way of thinking or a certain, like all of those kinds of things, whereas so many other folks would actually be able to show up and contribute. We just don't, because there's only the able-bodied people who think the same way or whatever, we don't even know what we're missing out on. Like, we don't even know the ways that others can contribute to that space.
Totally. And I have felt that in so many ways. Like when there's friend groups where the main times everyone's hanging out is, you know, going out drinking and like being at bars late at night, I'm not going to be able to be an integral part of that friend group when, mm-hmm. not that I think that should never happen, but when that's like the main times that we're bonding as a group, then I won't be able to be part of that group. And around actions, like I can't always go. And I mean, I don't think I can really probably go at all unless I buy some mobility aids, because I've almost fainted at actions on more than one occasion. And my health would have to change drastically for me to be able to go if I don't buy like a walker or like something else like that. And I already feel the stigma of that. Like I don't have something like that at this point, but I do have a shower chair, and I have had people who are close to me in my life who I don't think meant to be hurtful, but their reaction to that was like very stigmatizing, because mm-hmm. it was like what, seriously, like are you 80, you know, like that kind of mm-hmm. reaction. And that's like, there's a lot of then shame that I carry. I'm like, no, I'm 34, but you know, and until I bought that, it was like after showering I would just have to like go lie down for a long time and, you know, not feel well for a lot of my day. Yeah. And that doesn't really make sense. So I guess I'm just saying that, I mean, one of the big things I wanted to talk about today is what gets in the way of us having these communities of our dreams. And that's a big one for me. Mm-hmm. Do you have things that you're aware of as big barriers to you to having this?
Barrier is an interesting word, because I don't know if it's a barrier, because when I think of barrier, it's like, if this thing just wasn't there, then the community of my dreams would be possible. So maybe it's more, I wish that the community of my dreams would not be a place where people felt scared to openly learn and disagree and maybe have conflict and not like, let's get in a fight, but like that there wouldn't be this expectation that when a group of people are there, that they would all just be always in tune with each other. There's some kind of expectation that it's going to always feel comfortable and it's always going to feel pleasant and it's always going to feel uplifting and it's always going to feel like, and I want all those things. Like I wish that it could always be that way, but I think it's impossible. And yeah, I think that for the most part, and I've seen this and I've experienced this, where folks who previously, I would have seen them as part of my community because I think that we agree on like 99% of things. And then the 1% of things that we might not agree on becomes like, well, you're a horrible person and you are just, you know, like that upends the whole possibility of the connection. And then that cycles outward to other people who feel similarly about the 1% of things that we don't agree on, or the 1% of things that are like, I'm open for influence. Like I'm open to be influenced by anyone about that, or I'm open to learning about that. But I think that sometimes we have really idealistic, I think we have a lot of high ideals and expectations that we're going to be on the same page 100% of the time. And that's not realistic. And I wish that we would be more comfortable embracing that and allowing folks the space to be in the 2% or 3% wiggle room and like recognizing what we do have more in common. And I think that oftentimes that ideal of like, let's focus on what we have in common, not what separates us, can be co-opted by folks who are like just
silencing.
Yeah, it can be. I appreciate that, but I think that they're like, you've said this, even a broken clock is right once a day or something like that. Like twice a day. Sorry. why twice? Why not thrice? I don't know.
Because 2 o'clock and 2 o'clock.
Oh, shut the fuck up. All right. You're smarter than I am. Yes, that would make perfect sense in a 24-hour clock. But do you know what I'm trying to say?
That yes.
I think that when people hear community, myself included, up until a point over the past couple of years, I'd always kind of assumed that we would all be in perfect unity all the time. And it's like, well, that's not even, no. And yeah, you also shouldn't want that.
Yeah.
That shouldn't be the ideal, to be honest.
I agree. So I'm longing for obligation. You're longing for conflict. I love this.
Tie us down and yell and scream. Yes. Yes. Yes.
And I guess I'm thinking another barrier for me, and it's so related, I think, to some of these things that you've talked about, things around conflict, things around the idea of like needing a group that's like, don't leave. We need to work this out. I've just had really bad experiences in groups, and specifically the only time in my life that I really felt like I was part of a tight-knit group and we considered each other family, I ended up experiencing a lot of violence from some of those people. Mm-hmm. And when I, and there was one other person, and when we experienced those things, and then when we tried to speak about it, we were not supported at all. We were very much stigmatized and targeted. And that meant that we had to leave. And I think it's so scary to try to build something when your only experience of it has been so harmful. And I imagine there's a lot of us who've experienced that in different ways, you know, coming from families of origin, maybe where there was abuse and violence, or, you know, myself as well experiencing bullying a lot as a kid. It's like, I guess a big part of what gets in the way for me is maybe the expectation that I will be hurt or I will be rejected. And I think that is such a big part of why maybe I'm not proactively out there trying to build these groups. Mm. Have you had experiences like that, or do you relate to that in any way?
I really do. I don't think I have front of mind experiences like that. But when you were just speaking of the fear of being hurt or being rejected, it's like, to speak to that point, like my ideal community would be one that if I were hurt or harmed, people would care enough to attend to that. Mm-hmm. And that if dynamics between me and some folks in the group meant that they didn't like me, that others weren't doing an about face to that and pretending that that wasn't also harmful or also affecting me, or, you know, that there would be like a, oh, wow, yeah, we did notice that. Like, people would actually care enough, because I think what oftentimes happens is, like, you only become friends with the people who like you, and then you become a little thing, like a little pod, and then folks that don't like you, they become sort of like your enemy. And instead of that, I would want for my ideal community, or ours, because I think it's the same, to be one where... My question for you in this is, what is immediacy? Because you talk about immediacy a lot, and I would love for you to define it. I'm sure you've done it before, but you would have the opportunity to be like, hey, did I do something? Or why don't you like me? Or like, maybe it wouldn't be the people that are necessarily rejecting you, but you could be okay with the fact that not everybody has to like you, and that other people around you do like you and do want you to be there, despite one person who might have an issue with you or whatever it might be. And that the people around you and the people that are friends with that person who is rejecting you or giving you that energy would feel accountable for your well-being and theirs at the same time, that there wouldn't necessarily have to be, because I think that there is the reality that we're going to be harmed and some people might reject us, but in this ideal community, that it wouldn't go so far as the harm just being unattended to and you're kind of having to deal with it by yourself. And that rejection would mean like opportunity for others to step in and say, how is this affecting you? Or at least say, hey, if you have a problem with her, like, that's fine, but can you deal with it? Like, can you actually work through it, or something like that? That's what came to mind when you were talking about those real and legitimate fears and that become barriers and obstacles for you to be part of community. And then I'm like, how can we spin that, knowing that community is not going to be this perfect thing where everyone is always loving us, always seeing that we are worthy and stuff like that. Like, they're made out of like real human beings, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I think something that would really be needed is buy-in to certain values in a way. And I mean, I know that this is very, it's again, easier said than done, but I think, you know, in the past, some of those, like those tight-knit groups, when I'm experiencing sexual violence from multiple members of the group and nobody, and I am talking about it and mm-hmm. nobody cares. Mm-hmm. I mean, we didn't all enter into a group where we claimed to care.
Right.
And some people do, and those problems still happen. So, you know, there is no utopia. But I guess when you brought up immediacy, or maybe I said it and
you said it didn't notice. And then I was like, what does that mean? Well, I don't know what it means, really.
Yeah. And the way I understand it, or the way I'm talking about it, is the ability to speak directly about what's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you, yeah. So you knew that.
Yeah. I think I knew. I just didn't want to make an assumption, like immediacy. So
you had the context clues. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, when I was thinking about, okay, so I've been doing, you know, therapy for a long time, but especially recently, as we've talked about on the podcast, around my experiences with bullying and with abuse and those kinds of things. And it's really helped to allow me to realize that that doesn't have to be my reality forever. And knowing that it isn't my fault is also knowing that it's not going to happen to me in every situation I go to, because I'm not causing it. So that really gives me a freedom to believe that it can be different. Mm-hmm. So when I'm thinking about, okay, well, how would I build a community like this? I think I've always assumed it would have to be like, I naturally somehow develop a social group, and then we sort of slowly over time develop certain norms or bonds or whatever responsibilities. And I started thinking, you know, maybe part of what this looks like is going to people with that immediacy and sort of saying, like, we need this type of collective community. Is that something that you are interested in? And if so, like, let's work on that together. And who else do you know that is interested in that and looking for that. And let's all use that immediacy to talk about that and not just like hope we maybe one day develop it.
Yeah. So your ideal community would be, there's an intentionality there, right? There's like a call and a response, as opposed to, oh, there's this inevitable thing that's going to happen, which I think we all, I mean, I felt similarly where it's like, maybe if we're just like great and people will notice that we're great friends and they'll be like, oh yeah, like, let's all just be like one big friend group or something. But yeah, I mean, where, I guess what's the barrier to having that level of, hey, do you want to do this? Or do you want to, like, I'm looking to have a community that's like about these things. Like, are you about these things? Do you want to be part of that? For me, the thing that gets in the way of doing that exact thing is just the, I think it's rejection or fear of rejection.
Exactly.
I, for sure. I also think it all can be summed up in the fear of rejection. Rejection for the concept itself, rejection on like the interpersonal, as in like, I don't want to do this with you. Why you? Yeah. And maybe kind of flipping the thing you said that you wanted is like, I want the expectation of it. I think often when you become the initiator of something, people always look to you. And what I think is really important about this ideal community is that people aren't like, well, Nick's going to do it. Like, everybody is showing up thinking like, well, any of us could do it, and any of us could do it in our own way. And that would all be valuable. You know, that there wouldn't necessarily need to be like one person who is like the holder or the bringer of, and maybe there is one that's their gift or that's like their talent of like bringing people together. But that wouldn't necessarily mean that the burden of the labor of bringing people together falls on one human. Mm-hmm. Like, that to me ends up being, it's just the slippery slope to hero worship or like, here's a person who represents us or like that kind of thing, as opposed to, no, all of us are here. All of us could step into this position where we're calling the group together for whatever reason. You know, it wouldn't be like, well, you need to send it to Nick and she'll determine whether we can have a, you know, community meeting because she's the one who does the agendas. Like, I think so easily it can become the dynamic that we are taught and we learn through working, where it's like there's one focal point or one point person and they do the thing and they're the ones who pull it together. And again, not to discredit the skill that and the gift that person might have to do that exact job or play that exact role. But there's got to be this like equitable distribution of how we come together. Does, you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. I mean, it's not a strong or a stable community if, you know, if one person died or moved away, the whole thing falls apart. That's not a strong community. But I'm glad you came around to feeling in your own way that like, that fear of rejection, I think that's what I was trying to get at talking about some of my previous experiences, you know, realizing that, oh, this is like really vulnerable. And I think that is such a key piece.
Yes, that's it.
To build these communities requires vulnerability. Ooh, and,
no. But also delicious. Which is,
yes, yes. And I mean, similarly, you know, as there's so many introverts who, it's like we're like, I'm single and I would like a relationship, but I also do not want a date and I just I want to sit in my house and can someone just find me somehow? And I feel like it's kind of a similar thing, right? Is this like, I'm longing for community, but I'm scared to ask for it or like try to pursue it. So I'm just going to hope that one day it happens and I'm going to feel very lonely and isolated in the meantime, but like maybe one day.
Right.
And I think what I'm realizing, yeah, is that vulnerability is possible.
Hmm.
And I guess I suspect that I might be really surprised if I allow myself to practice more of that vulnerability.
Especially with people that are not just in your immediate friend group. That's the thing. Because I'm okay with practicing the vulnerability with people that are, you know, my friends, because obviously. But when you're you know, it's like an acquaintance or somebody that you don't know that you heard, oh yeah, like they're pretty rad and they would be great and they have these, you know, gifts to offer. It feels like a cold call. And, you know, it feels like it feels like somebody could be like, what? No, absolutely not. And you're like, okay, shit, bye. You know? So yeah, the vulnerability piece really stands out, is that you kind you really do need that as a embedded practice for, I don't know, maybe it's for everyone to feel like they can be themselves, or that and be themselves in that space, that they don't have to change who they are to be in that space, or that I mean, I think we're all going to change because of like how we co-regulate when we're together, or how what we need, what we notice is needed, or what the situation calls for. Like, we're always in change, we're always in process, but that it wouldn't become like these are the norms with a capital N, and this is how you have to behave, and this is how we you know, I find that to be, we lose the like heterogeneity of like the difference, like the diversity of all these different people's ways of thinking and looking at things and conceptualizing and identifying problems and even seeing problems or not being able to see those problems, and what they see instead is something completely different. Like, when we have the expectation that we're, again, it's not, I said before that we're expecting no conflict, but I think what I, the bigger pan out is that we're expecting people to show up to community perfect and all similar and all uniform. And it's like, no, that's not like, please not, please let's not do that.
It doesn't exist. Yeah. And we wouldn't want that anyway, even if we think we would. It's it doesn't serve any of us. But I think a lot of this, the good news is that I think a lot of this can start with the people that we're already close with. It's again, like the building blocks, and we can build outward. So I'm going to practice vulnerability and say right now, Nick, you know, we're so close. We have lots of people in common. And can we keep talking away from microphones about what building these kinds of groups and communities would look like?
I said no to you on this podcast.
I mean,
absolutely not.
I would have to learn that that's okay.
Rejection.
Some people will say no, that it's possible. Some people will say no, and you can be like, okay, then I will keep looking and I will go to my other bonds as well.
It's true. And I mean, first of all, absolutely yes. I wonder, for myself, I think I want to be able to commit to thinking about community in less formal ways. Because as I described the things that I'm like, oh, I think we are oftentimes co-opting the things that we've been taught in work dynamics or in work relationships about what it's supposed to be like when we're, you know, a bunch of people coming together. There's one point person, whatever. As I'm a facilitator, so like naturally I'm always like, that's what I go to. And I think it has to be cohesive. You have to have a concept. You have to, and it's like, or you could just be a human being like, wouldn't it be cool if we had like, if we thought there's like a number in mind, like there's 50 of us that we're kind of just committed to similar types of values, and we're committed to vulnerability, and we want to be able to show up for each other. Would you be down for that? Cool. Here's a Facebook group. And like, that's it. There's no, please don't call me with questions about how to use the group or mods or anything like that. I don't want to do that. I just want to be able to bring people together so that if any of us have needs, or any of the people that we know who are not part of this community have needs, or whatever it might be, that we have like a base to work with and a connection point or something like that. So I think I need to really unlearn the formality of community, or the ways that community, I guess I've learned that it means something and it looks in a very particular way. So back to the question about what are the barriers? The barrier is me, babe. I might be. Could it be me? Am I the barrier? Yes, I could be.
Devastatingly, we've learned that the problem was us the whole time. No, just kidding. We're not problems.
Well, I mean,
we're not problems, but the problems live within us. But it's not our fault. You know, we live in the society that we live in. We've had the experiences that we have. There's nothing wrong with us. And we have to kind of get out of our own way.
That's it. So, that's it.
Yeah. Yes. I think let's commit to trying to get out of our own way and like experimenting and maybe reimagining some things.
I commit. I commit to that. Yes.
Hey everyone, it's Nick.
And Lala.
If you've been listening to Scene and you like what you hear,
please share us with your friends.
Subscribe to the podcast.
Follow us on Instagram at Scene the Podcast.
Write a review and just tell us what you think.
And help make this work sustainable by supporting Scene the Podcast on Patreon.
We need our beautiful community and we cannot do this without you.